Total RL is the home of rugby league. With news, reports and features on both the pro and amateur game in the UK and overseas. League Express is available from your store every Monday and digitally every Sunday night. Subscribe to print and digital versions at totalrl.com/shop. Plus, subscribe to the monthly Rugby League World magazine or available exclusively online. TotalRL.com. Rugby League at your fingertips.
All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of the League Express podcast. My name's Jake Keenan, and joining me as always is the editor of League Express, Martin Sadler. And Martin, we had some Challenge Cup Rugby League over the weekend. Did you watch all the action?
Yes, I did. And it was both games, at least as far as the men are concerned, were a bit more one-sided than ideally we might have liked, weren't they? Mm. I was hoping for two really close games, and we didn't get them. Hull KR just didn't seem on their game against Wigan at Doncaster on Saturday, and that was incredibly disappointing for their very significant following at Doncaster. And then the following day, Huddersfield were, you know, even more off their game against Warrington. 46-10 at St Helens was a disastrous performance, really, by Huddersfield. And you know, I wrote recently about why are Lancashire clubs seemingly stronger than Yorkshire ones at the moment, and the Challenge Cup semi-finals just seemed to emphasise that point, Jake, didn't they?
Yeah, and we also had some women's matches taking place. St Helens 32 defeated York Valkyrie 2, and Leeds 34 defeated Wigan 20. So it's going to be a replay of last year's
final. It will be, yeah. I mean, York Valkyrie, unfortunately, were hit by a terrible bug in the week leading up to the game, and a lot of their players were quite ill. Some of them didn't play, and those who did play were really feeling under the weather. So what should have been a really great game turned out to be a fairly one-sided game. But the game between Leeds and Wigan, I think you saw some of it, didn't you? You were at St Helens on Sunday, and that was a much closer affair, and a pretty skilful affair too.
Yeah, it was the quality of the match was really, really good, and I only got to catch the second half of it. But yeah, one of the standouts for me was the Leeds fullback Ruby Enright, I believe.
She's a very good player, isn't she?
Yeah, she's just her speed and elusiveness. Like, she was so hard to tackle, and every time she had the ball in hand, she was very threatening. So a big shout out to her. I was very impressed with her performance, and I'm looking forward to seeing her on the big stage at Wembley. But let's take a deeper look at the two men's matchups over the weekend, mate. So Wigan 38 defeated Hull KR 6. You touched on it before, a bigger scoreline than I think everyone was expecting. But yeah, Wigan just too strong in showing their depth, I guess.
Well, they were winning 24-0 at half time, weren't they? They took an early lead through Jake Wardle. And, you know, they got a grip on Hull KR's throat right from the start and never let go. And they'd certainly learned a lot from that game two or three weeks earlier, hadn't they, when they went to Hull KR and were hammered, really, by Hull KR, who did to them on that day what Wigan did to Hull KR on Saturday. So, you know, Hull KR were never really in with a chance, were they? When you're losing 24-0 at half-time, all you can do really is play for pride, I think. And, I mean, they did that. And I thought, actually, the outstanding player in the game, it may seem ridiculous to say it, but Mikey Lewis, in my view, was absolutely, you know, superb in that game, in a losing side, a side being beaten so convincingly. Mikey Lewis never stopped trying. He was a bag of tricks all afternoon. Unfortunately, you know, most of them didn't seem to work. He didn't quite get the support from his teammates and so on. But it was it was such a disappointment. But, you know, he's certainly got nothing whatsoever to be ashamed about. And I think the Hull KR fans who were there recognised that as well. And, you know, it was obviously a setback for Hull KR, because you go back a year ago and they beat Wigan 11-10 in that semi-final that was played at Headingley last year, with that very, very memorable field goal in golden point time from Brad Schneider. Of course, Brad Schneider's not here anymore. But I thought, as I've written in League Express this week, that the Hull KR team that played on Saturday is very different to the one that played in last year's semi-final. Probably about almost half the team has been changed.
Mm.
And I thought initially that the Hull KR team this year, the squad, was stronger than it was last year. But I think maybe one of the crucial differences, having rethought that now, is that Hull KR are missing some real experience. Sean Kenny-Dowell, Cairn Lynette, two crucial players from last year, both retired, and maybe Hull KR in big games are just missing those two players more than they perhaps seem to show earlier in the season.
Mm, yeah, I agree with everything you just said there, Martin. I thought Mikey Lewis was outstanding. That flick pass that he threw for that try they scored was outstanding. And I will say, on the Wigan side, Junior Nsemba, he is so impressive.
He's going to be a big star.
Yeah. I'm thinking, this is what his ability is now. Can you imagine what he's going to be like in 3 or 4 years' time?
Absolutely, yeah. He's a big star. If I were an Australian club looking to sign a British star, then he's the one that I'd be looking to sign.
I was,
you know, and obviously Wigan won't want to lose him. I mean, but obviously we don't know what Junior Nsemba's ambitions are. So if he does want to go to the other side of the world, I think he'll be in very big demand.
Mm. Well, selfishly, as a Broncos fan, I thought to myself, I want to see him in a Broncos jersey tomorrow.
Well, it's certainly not impossible to imagine, is it?
But yeah, tremendous potential there, and the sky's the limit for him, I think.
I thought the outstanding try in the game, incidentally, was Wigan's second try when Bevan French gave that perfect kick to the corner. That was taken by Abbas Miski, and it just beat Ryan Hall, the defensive winger, in that situation. And that was just absolutely a magnificent try. It was very nearly our try of the week in League Express, but there was one that beat it that we'll probably come to in a minute or so. But you know, what a brilliant performance it was by Wigan, and you know, they will. They will be up for it at Wembley. There's no doubt about that, is there?
Well, I certainly felt bad watching on the TV just Willie Peters' reaction. You could see just the ball wasn't bouncing their way, and it seemed every single bounce was heading in Wigan's favour. And some of those infield kicks they did on those breaks down the sideline, it's just like,
well, that's how it goes when you're winning. You know, the ball tends to bounce in your direction, doesn't it? But it was such a convincing win. There's no doubt. I thought Wigan were absolutely outstanding. They look like the team that beat Penrith earlier in the year, didn't they? In the World Club Challenge.
No, definitely.
And I think that's absolutely fantastic for them. And you know, it's going to be a great final, I think.
Absolutely. Well, we'll move on to Sunday's matchup. Warrington 46 points. They defeated Giants 10. What was your reaction to this matchup, Martin?
Well. In a way, I mean, it was even worse in a way than the previous day's game. I mean, you know, the halftime score here was, 22-4. So Huddersfield had got on the scoreboard. They did get on the scoreboard through Adam Swift on 25 minutes. But, you know, the Warrington team absolutely hammered them, really, didn't they? And looked completely dominant. Huddersfield became very frustrated. Again, I thought, you know, Jake Connor couldn't keep his feelings out of the game. You know, was an angry young man, it seemed to me, just watching it. And I mean, you were there, Jake. You did the report in League Express. So what was your verdict on that game?
Yeah, I was not surprised. I thought Warrington were going to win going into the matchup, but yeah, there were some elements that did surprise me. I was sort of surprised by how well Warrington's attack was flowing. I think George Williams, the way he's playing at the moment, you'd have to argue he's probably in some of his career best form.
Oh, I think so, yes.
Matt Dufty, outstanding at fullback. He looked threatening every time he touched the ball. But yeah, it just seemed like...
But one player who played well, and I was pleased to see him playing well, was Josh Drinkwater. And in fact, his try, the opening try of the game, was the one that we made the League Express try of the week.
Yeah.
Because that was... I love tries that are sort of generated from inside a team's own half, where, you know, you're deep in your own half, you're playing the ball, and you get it out to the wings and so on, and you create a brilliant try. And that's exactly what they they did there. Josh Drinkwater was the guy who finished it off, but it was the thing that started it was a long pass from George Williams to Matty Ashton, who then, you know, broke downfield, passed inside to Toby King, and he gave the winning pass to Drinkwater, and it was great. And it, you know, Drinkwater not long ago wasn't getting in the side, of course, because Leon Hayes was keeping him out until that really unfortunate injury. And there was a lot of talk about Josh Drinkwater perhaps being sent off somewhere else for the rest of the season. And obviously Sam Burgess must now be incredibly relieved that that didn't happen.
Yeah.
Mustn't he?
Well, can you imagine, you know, what that would be like now without him in team? He'd be on George Williams to steer him around. And his kicking game, his long kicking game is also sensational. Like the amount of times he's gotten them out of trouble just by his big long kicks.
Absolutely,
Just on the Jake Connor incident, you could just see he was losing his cool a little bit towards the end of the match, and there was a few instances.
He always does when it's not going his way.
And after the match, Ian Watson made a very brief comment about it. He said he didn't want to talk about it in front of the media before he addressed Jake personally, but it seems like it's something they're going to have to sit down and have a chat.
Well, and he needs an anger management course, doesn't he? of some sort. You know, it just needs to be able, I mean, he's such a talented guy, but he just needs to be able to control himself a bit more and keep his concentration on the game, not on having, you know, expressing his own personal gripes. That's just not wise, is it, on the field? And, you know, he's a great player potentially, but at the moment he's, you know, all too likely to let his own team down.
That's right. And before we sort of touched on Drinkwater not being able to crack that Warrington side when Leon Hayes was playing, another player at the moment who seems to be struggling to crack that 17 is Stephen Ratchford. He's been 18th man. I think he was 18th man on the weekend and the prior week as well. Obviously, they've got Roderick Tye playing in the centres at the moment. I'm just wondering whether he will get back into that side eventually.
Well, I think Roderick Tye is not a bad player. You know, I didn't know much about him really, but I think he's come very well into the Warrington side. And all I can say about Stephen as 18th man is what an 18th man he is. You know, if you've got Stephen Ratchford as your 18th man, then my goodness, that's pretty good. You know, it shows that you've got a strong 17. As far as I'm concerned. But I'd love to see Stephen play at Wembley because I think he's had such a wonderful career and deserves that honour. But, I mean, obviously, Sam will pick his strongest side for that game, whatever he thinks that strongest side is. So, you know, there's no guarantee for Stephen or, indeed, for anybody else to play in that game. But it's going to be fabulous to see. I mean, obviously, looking at the Warrington side, they also had Connor Wrench not in the 17 as well, who's a really potentially very good centre too. So they are blessed with a lot of very good players in that position. So you know, who knows who's going to get the nod for the Challenge Cup final?
That's right. And I guess you could say minus Leon Hayes, they've been pretty lucky with injuries this far into the season. They're not missing too many, I don't believe, from their...
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that if you look at the squad numbers of the players who played, numbers 1 to 17 all played, all were included in the 18-man squad. The only player outside that 1 to 17 was number 32, Sam Powell. So, you know, they are quite fortunate with injuries and... Huddersfield, you know, they were not quite so fortunate. Quite a few of their top players were missing. So, you know, but that's how it goes. You've just got to play the hand you're dealt, haven't you? And injuries are just a constant theme of rugby league, and you've got to find a way to win despite the fact that you've got those players missing, and that's just the nature of the game.
Now, just a couple of talking points following this match. Huddersfield, they've now lost four in a row. Is it concerning signs for...
Well, obviously, it's concerning. Any defeat is concerning for a coach. And, you know, Huddersfield, they play Lee at home this weekend, don't they? Which is a really big game for both sides because Lee are, you know, trying to get back into the playoff picture, and that's on Friday night. I think that's going to be a really interesting game. Personally, you know, we'll talk about the weekend's games a little later, but Huddersfield need to win one, but then so do Lee.
Absolutely. Now, has Sam Burgess proved some of his early critics wrong with how he's performed with this Warrington side, getting them to Wembley?
Well, I'm not sure he had too many early critics because, you know, it wasn't so much a criticism that people had. It was just a doubt that he may not be experienced enough to take on the head coaching role at a major club. Well, as every week goes by, Sam is proving that he does appear to have exactly what it takes. And, you know, he can feel very proud of what he's achieved so far. What a massive test at Wembley. I mean, that's going to be really incredible. And if he does pull off a win at Wembley, that will be an almost unbelievable start to his coaching career. A bit like Matty Pete winning the Challenge Cup in 2022, when coincidentally they beat Huddersfield as well in the at Tottenham Hotspur. So amazing, but you know, I don't think Sam has many critics, but just maybe a few doubters that he's, you know, got the experience. Of course, he's now being linked with the Parramatta job in Australia. We'll talk about the NRL a little bit later. But every job that comes up in Australia, Sam will be linked with, won't he?
No, I'm sure he will be, especially with how they're playing at the moment. Now, just in terms of looking forward to Wembley, being at that match on the weekend, I was almost excited and happy for the Warrington fans that they were the team that got through, because I sort of looked over to the Huddersfield end of the field and there wasn't as much travelling fans.
No.
I just think that with Warrington being at Wembley, they've got a better chance of filling out the allocated seating than Huddersfield would. And Wigan will obviously take a very strong fan base down as well.
We would certainly hope so.
In terms of atmosphere, I'm hoping for a really good one.
Yes, well, let's hope it is. Obviously, the Challenge Cup final has not been able to fill Wembley in recent years, but it's difficult to imagine a more attractive game, isn't it, than Wigan versus Warrington. So, you know, I don't know how ticket sales are going since the weekend, but let's hope that they are strong and that we do, you know, get a great crowd there.
No, definitely. Now, we'll move on to some of the news that's happened over the last week or so, Martin. We've had some signing news. So, Adrian Lamb, he's re-signed with Lee to coach for a further 3 seasons. I think they'll take him through to the end of 2027.
So important for Lee. I mean, he is the most important signing that they could make, you know, ahead of any players, in my view. So, it now remains to be seen, you know, which other players will sign for them. You know, obviously a few of, well, they're obviously losing John Asiata. They will probably lose Matt Moylan. They may well lose Tom Amone, who I think is probably their outstanding player in terms of what he brings in the middle of the field. Lachlan Lamb, I'm not quite sure what his long-term future is, but I'd be amazed if he didn't want to have a stint in the NRL. So, you know, they've got a bit of rebuilding to do at Lee, but when they've got a coach there for 3 years, they've got the stability in place to be able to attract some very good players, I think, and hopefully they will.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's also been some reports coming out today. I think it was a Courier Mail report that's linked John Cartwright, the current Brisbane Broncos assistant coach and former Gold Coast Titans head coach, with Hull FC. Now, apparently the deal has been done. Nothing official yet from Hull FC. What's your reaction to this news?
Well, it's interesting because I didn't know that much about John Cartwright's coaching record, but having just checked it out, he was the inaugural Gold Coast Titans coach from 2007, and he coached them until 2014. And in that time, he had a 46% success record, which is, you know, far better than what the Titans have had since he left. And he also took them to the finals in 2009 and 2010, and actually got the Titans to the preliminary final in 2010, one step away from the grand final. And I must admit, I'd forgotten that, you know, given the intervening years. So that looks an impressive record to me. And he's worked at several other clubs in a coaching capacity. He did play for Penrith Panthers, of course, for 11 years. Mm. So, you know, a hell of a playing record too. And he's currently with the Brisbane Broncos as an assistant coach there. So, you know, his CV looks very, very good to me. Mm. And, you know, when somebody mentioned his name to me, you know, you always sort of think, well, why him? Mm. But when you actually look at his record, then you get the answer. You know, he's obviously clearly a very good coach. I mean, the only negative from his point of view is that he hasn't coached in Britain, so doesn't, you know, have the understanding of the British game that he'll need. But I'm sure he's smart enough to be able to put that right, you know, pretty quickly, really.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very smart move by Hull on the face of it. And, you know, Richie Myler has obviously had an important role in making that decision. And I think that looks to me like a good decision, certainly on the face of it.
Mm. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he goes. And it's always hard when you see a team have success to know how much of a role the assistant coaches are playing behind the scenes. And there's no denying they play a massive role. They run a lot of the training drills while the head coach is overseeing the rest of it.
I'd have thought so. And I would imagine Richie Myler presumably would have spoken to Kevin Walters. I mean, obviously, Kevin has Cartwright as one of his assistants, Lee Breers as one of his other assistants. You saw Lee Breers sitting just behind Kevin Walters at the Magic Weekend just gone. And apparently, Lee didn't want to come back to England at this stage of his career. But John Cartwright, who's had a much longer coaching career, clearly is happy to do that and take on a head coaching role again. Incidentally, interesting, you know, all coaches get sacked, don't they, at the you know, eventually. But in 2014, when he left the Titans, he actually didn't get sacked. He actually announced a few weeks before the end of the season that he was going to leave them and coached one more game before Neil Henry then took over for the rest of the season. So technically, as far as I'm aware, he's never been sacked as a coach. You know, people might check that and find that he has been sacked as an assistant coach, but I'm pretty sure he hasn't. Mm. So he's again, you know, he's got a very good record.
Mm. No, I'm very, very excited to see how he goes. And as we said before, nothing has officially been announced, but, you know, Korea Mail. Usually they get some pretty good mail.
The reporters. I'm sure it will be.
So yeah, we'll keep an eye out for that in the coming days. Now on player signings, Tommy Makinson. It's been announced that he's going to leave the Saints at the end of the year and head on down to the Catalans to.
Yes, well, he will replace Tom Davis, who will come back. I think to Hull KR, if I remember rightly, Tom Davis. Is it Hull KR? Yeah. But, I mean, Tommy Makinson's going to play out the rest of his career. He's obviously in the veteran stage now, but still a hell of a player. Mm. And he's just going to have two or three years in the south of France, you know, to enjoy a change from St. Helens. And I don't think it's, from his point of view, I think that's a great move. I'm sure he'll enjoy himself down in Perpignan, and you know, I wish him all the very best for that move.
Mm. Now, over the last, I think there was an article in League Express this week, just on the London Broncos coach Mike Eccles. He's called for the RFL, IMG, and London as a club to come together and sort of try and figure out a way that they can remain in Super League next season.
Well, I don't think they will agree to his request, to be honest. You know, unfortunately, they all voted for this grading system and its impact on who would be in Super League next year. And I think it's probably now too late to change it. But clearly, somebody needs to demonstrate that rugby league in London is incredibly important for the future of the game. I mean, the Broncos, you know, moving to Wimbledon as they have done, I think it's a superb little stadium, a superb venue for them in London. And it's such a shame that I think they're playing with such a lot of spirit, you know. And it's just such a shame that that they, you know, they've known right from the start that they were going to be relegated no matter what. Mm. And that's just tragic in my view.
Mm. It's almost like they're everyone's second favourite team at
the moment. I think they are at the moment, yeah.
Want them to do well and win a few games. And I think everyone in the league sympathises for, I guess the hand.
Well, I'm not sure that the other 11 Super League clubs sympathise, if I'm honest about it. And that's the crazy thing. The clubs have too much power and too great a tendency to put their own self-interest first. Mm. And that's just absolutely ridiculous. There shouldn't be, you know, the RFL bends over to the clubs all the time, and it shouldn't be doing it. The RFL should be putting what's good for the long-term health of rugby league as its first priority. And it doesn't seem to be doing that at the moment to me.
Mm.
So, you know, I'd love to be proved wrong, but London is vital. The other story that we had this week, Jake, is this business about the interest that the NRL has in buying a stake in Super League. Apparently, although I don't think it's been confirmed yet, maybe it has, they've been approached by, I think it's RL Commercial, to inquire if they would like a stake in Super League, and of course discussions are at a very preliminary stage, so we don't yet know what's going to happen there. But if the NRL took a controlling interest, for example, in Super League, my guess is that they would immediately see the importance of London Broncos, and they would divert resources in that direction. And I also think that the NRL would look at this grading system and wonder what the hell it's all about, and would probably ditch it, to be honest. And I think that would be, you know, welcomed by most people, frankly, Jake.
Yeah, I'm thinking if the NRL were to come in, they'd more likely take the approach of, all right, where are we doing well? Where do we need to do better? Mm. And let's invest in those areas where we need to do better rather than these clubs have ticked off a few ticks on the checklist. They can stay, that sort
ridiculous.
Of thing.
So, yeah.
We'll see what comes of that. I did read the article and I did make a note here. The report is that they're seeking a significant investment from, 20 to upwards of potentially 50% stake in Super League. So, we'll see what happens with this story. It'll be a work in progress, this story, I'd imagine.
Well, we're not going to get an early decision on it, I wouldn't have thought. You know, I doubt very much whether we're going to get an announcement later this week saying the NRL has bought 50% of Super League, or even how that would be constructed, because it would be a very complex issue, wouldn't it? So, who knows? I mean, you know, potentially the NRL, as I've said on here before, could just start their own competition in England and invite clubs to join it. And that wouldn't that be fascinating?
Yeah, that's right. And also disastrous at the same time for the RFL. So
absolutely, yes. And hopefully, I mean, we should have learned from the Super League wars that you know, warring parties in rugby league rarely come out with a great conclusion. And it takes years to rebuild the game after that sort of damage, as we saw in Australia. It's funny, only now do we see in Australia, you know, that the game's reaching the potential that it showed before the Super League war there.
Yep.
You know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that sort of leads us into our next point, mate, because we had some record-breaking attendance figures over the weekend. Starting on Thursday night, we had the game one of the new three-game series for the Women's State of Origin. 25,492 people attended that match.
And it was a great game, wasn't it?
It
was a great game, won by New South Wales in Brisbane. 22-12, I think the score was. But yeah, 25, nearly 26,000 people in the stadium. It looked terrific. But the more important thing, even more important than that, was the fact that on Channel 9, it attracted a free-to-air viewing audience of 941,000, which is greater than any NRL match this season and greater than the audience for any AFL match, Aussie Rules match, on Channel 7 this season in Australia. And that's just absolutely, you know, that's stunning, actually. I don't think people realise how significant that is. And it comes on the back of last year's incredible viewing figures for the Women's Football World Cup in Australia, when the Matildas were getting, you know, the Australian women's team were getting audiences, you know, into the millions for watching them in that tournament. And that just opened people's eyes to the potential for women's sport in sports other than football. And it's just amazing.
Mm, that's right. And like the product at the moment is outstanding. And that's why I think people are starting to show up and they're investing their spare time into watching these matches. And it's also happening in the WNBA at the moment over in America. There's been a new player enter the league. She was the number one draft pick. Her name's Caitlin Clark, and she's really good at shooting the basketball. She's always pulling up from well behind the three-point line and shooting the ball. And they've seen a huge uptick in crowd attendances. Some of the scheduling of the games have had to move to bigger stadiums to accommodate people who want to watch her play. So, you know, the NRL is not the only women's sport at the moment that is thriving.
No, it's happening all over, you know, in multiple sports. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, so fingers crossed we can keep building and obviously keep building over here as well.
What we need, though, in the Women's Super League here, we've got eight teams, but at the moment some of them are just not at the same level as the leading teams, and we need them all to get up there, don't we? You know, we had a 100-point scoreline a week ago. Huddersfield, I think, was it St Helens they lost to? Mm. Well, that's you know disappointing, and if we can get eight teams that are reasonably equally matched, at the moment we've got four teams. Well, five teams now if you include Wigan. You know, we've got St Helens, Wigan, York, Leeds, and who's the other one? But you know, we've got five teams, and we need eight.
Mm.
And if we can get to that, that will be marvellous.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I also liked that doubleheader that I was at the weekend. I think if we can start playing some of these matches before the men's on the weekend. I know some people are for and against that idea, but if you can get more eyeballs the match and people can see it's actually a good standard, it's only going to make the game
more
popular.
Well, the Women's Challenge Cup final will be shown, won't it, on the BBC?
Mm.
Although I'm not sure whether it's going to be on free-to-air or on iPlayer, but you know it will be visible as it was last year.
Mm. And just on the theme of crowd attendances, there was 149,196 fans that attended Magic Weekend this past weekend, which is, I believe, a record since they've started having these Magic Weekends.
Oh yeah, and wasn't it fabulous? I mean, every day was sold out in terms of tickets. I mean, not quite everybody who bought a ticket turned up, and they quoted the attendance figures. But I mean, isn't it typical that we start the Magic Weekend idea in England, and the Australians then copy it a few years later and turn it into a much greater success than we were able to do? So that's wonderful for rugby league. And what was so great was that the certainly the first six games, The games were so closely contested. The highest margin until Melbourne played Parramatta on Sunday, that was game number seven. The first six games, the biggest margin was eight when Cronulla beat Sydney Roosters in what was probably the game of the weekend. But all the other games were less than that, within a score, you know, which was quite remarkable, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, and like, you know, the Broncos getting a one-point win over Manly, that came right down to the wire.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I will say, I've been to, I think I went to the first Magic Round, and since then it's just gotten popular, like more popular every year.
Fabulous, yes.
And it is something that all the content creators around the NRL in Australia, they all travel up for it. They hold events at pubs, you know, outside of Suncorp Stadium. And I believe they've also renewed for a further 3 years that they're going to keep having Magic Round at Suncorp Stadium.
Oh, yes.
Going to change the venue.
It's not surprising, is it, really?
Yeah, so if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
No, I couldn't agree more.
And it looks like, yeah, people will keep showing up at Suncorp.
I mean, you know, there has been talk of taking Magic Round to other places, Perth or even Auckland or Melbourne or wherever. But the fact is, you know, the magic round in Brisbane is so strong now that you could actually set up a second magic weekend in the NRL and go to Perth or go to Auckland and make it just as big as, you know, the magic round that we've just seen. So you don't have to move the magic round from Brisbane. You can just add a second magic round to what's there already, you know, and I think that'd be fantastic.
I think the only people in the rugby league community in Australia that are against Magic Round would be the groundskeepers. I think they've got a tough job on their hands, but apart from that, I think everyone else wants it to keep happening and keep happening in Brisbane. So interesting to see if they can top that next year, but it's getting tough with some of those figures.
Very much so, yes.
But in other news, Wayne Bennett, it's official. He will be the head coach of the South Sydney Rabbitohs for the next three seasons,
amazing,
I believe.
Isn't it?
Now, there was a bit of concern because we obviously had the news that Brad Arthur got sacked by the Eels.
Yes.
So I think fans are worried that they might have a last-ditch effort at signing Wayne Bennett. But no, it's been made official the last day or so that he will be the coach of the South Sydney Rabbitohs again.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, they seem to be saying that Wayne will take on the Rabbitohs for 3 years and may then take on a new NRL club based in Papua New Guinea, by which time he'll be heading for 80, won't he? I mean, how long can he carry on?
I don't know.
You know, you never know. Mind you, having said that, I noticed that the Rolling Stones performed in Las Vegas a week or two ago and filled the stadium, and Mick Jagger's the lead singer at the age of 80.
Wow.
So, you know, what on earth, how on earth do they manage to do that? It's quite remarkable. So maybe, you know, 80 is a new 50. Who knows?
Yeah,
I hope it is, because obviously I'm getting older as well. So, you know, it'd be nice to think we can all carry on forever. But no, it's going to be an interesting time. South Sydney, you look at that league table and you see South Sydney at the bottom and Parramatta, you know, in 14th place. The two of the potentially biggest clubs in the NRL are right near the bottom. It's a bit like Wigan and St Helens being at the bottom of Super League, if they were. You know, and it's almost unbelievable. But it shows what an absolutely incredible competition, you know, the NRL is at the moment. And again, just going back to the Magic Weekend, one of the things that I love about it is that you get the chance to see all the teams playing there and you get the chance to see some of the young talent that's coming through. Young Ethan Strange, for example, playing at standoff or 5/8, as you call it, for Canberra in that very first game, looks a potential real star in the making. And you know, David Armstrong playing for Newcastle at fullback, replacing Kaelin Ponga, who's out with injury, scoring three tries and looks a terrific player. You know, there's just so much talent there, isn't there? And of course, we saw in the big game, we saw Nico Hines piloting Cronulla to that incredible victory over the Roosters and making a claim for the State of Origin shirt for New South Wales, which I'm sure he'll get picked for.
Yeah, I hope so, because he's probably deserved his chance, especially playing in the halves of the Blues. I know that one game he played, they brought him on in the centres, and a lot of people blamed him for Queensland scoring that runaway try to secure the series.
Yeah,
they
did.
One.
Yes, he got it in the neck on that one.
Yeah, and then after that he got dropped. So, and really, it wasn't his fault. He should have been playing in the halves. But what I will say is, for the Sharks, over the last few seasons, they've often been accused of being flat track bullies, only being able to beat the bottom sides and not being able to compete against the top. So it's great to see them get a good win over the Roosters there.
Well, they're putting that idea to bed, aren't they now?
Yeah, that's right. And
the only problem they have is they don't have a big enough stadium.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sure if they had a 20,000 stadium, they'd fill it at the moment. But obviously, it's only just about 13,000, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And the Sharkies fans, they're a very loyal fan base. So I'm sure they'll go far this year in the finals. And you know, who knows, they might achieve the same heights they did back in 2016, I think, when they last won the grand final.
It was, so, yes.
Yes. All right, Martin, any other news you want to touch on before we look at this weekend's matchups?
No, I think we've covered quite a bit of ground there, as far as I can see.
Yeah.
We'll move on to looking ahead to this weekend now.
Awesome.
Oh, just one thing though that's worth mentioning. the Challenge Cup final, we've talked a bit earlier about it. We need to fill it if we possibly can, and I don't think we will do that this year, not by a long way. But we were, funnily enough, having a chat in the in the office a few days ago about what could be done to fill Wembley. And somebody made a very good point and said that we ought to give a certain number of tickets to every Super League club and every Championship and League One club, maybe a couple of thousand to each Super League club, maybe 500 to each Championship club, and maybe a couple of hundred to each League One club, and oblige them to sell those tickets for Wembley for the Challenge Cup final at a strong discount, so that they'd have an incentive to sell those tickets, and then the number of tickets each club sold for Wembley, assuming that the club itself wasn't appearing at Wembley, the number of tickets they sell they'd get points for in the grading system,
right.
And that would be the best, but that would be the way to use the grading system to give a massive incentive to the clubs to cooperate on selling tickets for the Challenge Cup final. And my guess is, if you gave 2,000 tickets to every Super League club and said, if you sell them all, you'll get a point in your gradings.
Yeah.
My guess is they probably would nearly all sell them.
Yeah.
You know.
London would sell theirs and then they'd be asking for more.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That's a good idea. I'm sure.
We've got to start, I mean, if this grading system is going to mean anything, it's got to incorporate incentives for clubs to do the right thing, hasn't it, really?
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, there is, so there's six different clubs that will be playing on that day. So, between the 1895 Cup, the women's and the men's. So there's an opportunity there to attract six different fan bases, and then we just need the other clubs to sort of do some groundwork to offload some tickets too. So hopefully all those clubs can get down and support their teams.
Well, that's what we'd like to see, isn't it?
But in some somewhat related but unrelated news, Martin, you and I, we've celebrated a little bit of a milestone ourselves over the last week or so. We've
25,000 downloads.
Yeah, that's right. And that's across Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts. So that doesn't account for the YouTube viewers, but it's nice to see people listening in. And
it's good to know that you've got 25,000 relatives in Australia, Jake.
I don't know about that, mate.
But yes, no, it's great. It's marvellous, isn't it? Yeah, we're very happy with that.
Yeah, yeah. So
onwards and upwards, as they say.
And we thank all our listeners for tuning in every week.
And we are heading inexorably to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. We're up to nearly 950 now, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're going in that direction.
And don't forget to click on subscribe if you are watching right now.
Absolutely.
So you can be notified. But let's jump into this weekend's matchups, Martin. So on Friday we have Castleford taking on Hull FC. Who do you have in this one?
Well, you'd have to go for Castleford the way things are going at the moment for Hull. But who knows? I mean, I doubt very much whether John Cartwright will be here, assuming that he is appointed at Hull for this Friday's game. He'll have a lot of packing to do and sorting out, but I really can't see Hull winning this game, even though I hope they play well. Castleford had a horrible game a week or so ago against St Helens, but, you know, Hull won't provide the same challenge that St Helens did. So I think this will be another game for Castleford that gets them a little bit higher. I was going to say gets them a bit further away from the relegation zone, but that's not really relevant these days, is it? I think they'll be too strong for Hull, probably win by about 12 points.
Yeah. And the next matchup, we have Huddersfield taking on Lee.
Well, I think Lee will win this game. Huddersfield seem to play notoriously. I mean, it's weird for Huddersfield. They play better away than they do at home. And I think there'll be a lot of Lee fans at Huddersfield on Friday night, egging them on, wanting them to win this game. And I think they'll do it. I think they'll win by probably a margin of about 6 points. Very close, but I think they'll do it because they need the points. And if they can win this game, they'll only be 1 point behind Huddersfield in Super League.
So very crucial, this matchup. Then we move on to St Helens taking on Leeds.
Hard to imagine anything other than a convincing St Helens win. I don't know what Leeds' injury situation is now after having had a had you know, the week off, that might mean some of their injured players come back again. Although they've announced, for example, that Morgan Gannon won't play again this season with his concussion problems, which is a very, very sad thing to hear. And you know, our good wishes go to Morgan, and we hope that he makes a full recovery eventually. But St. Helens to win convincingly by probably about 24 points, I think.
Yeah. Moving on to Saturday's matchup, we have Catalans taking on Warrington.
Well, this is a repeat of the opening day fixture when Catalans won by 2 points. Warrington have improved a lot since then, but they might be just feeling the effects of that Challenge Cup game, although it probably didn't take as much out of them as it would have done if it had been a close game. So I think Warrington might just sneak this game by. They might just reverse that margin and win by 2 points.
Yeah. Sunday's matchups, we have London taking on Hull KR.
Well, London beat Hull FC at the Cherry Red Records Stadium, but I can't quite see them doing the same thing against Hull KR. Hull KR will be smarting from that Challenge Cup defeat, and they'll want to get back on the horse very, very quickly. I think they will do, and I suspect they'll win by 16.
Yep. And the final matchup of the weekend, we have Salford taking on Wigan.
Well, Salford, I love Salford, as anybody who's watched this podcast or listened to it will know. But I think Wigan are just too strong for them, and I think Wigan will win by probably about 20 points on Sunday.
Be interesting to see what clubs benefit the most from having the weekend off, if we see any revitalised teams. So,
it is going to be interesting. There's no doubt about it.
Yes, but just for our listeners and viewers, don't forget, if you do want to get your subscription to the League Express paper, head along to www.totalrl.com/shop. Rugby League World Magazine subscription can be subscribed to on there. And don't forget, guys, if you are watching on YouTube, hit subscribe so you're notified when we do upload our videos.
And get out to buy League Express, which is obviously in the shops, or you can get it from our website as well. So some fabulous reading, although I am biased, of course, but I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Martin, well, thanks again, mate. We'll do it again next week.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Jake.